This is special coverage from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Democratic candidate John Kerry has conceded the state of Ohio and with it the presidential election. About an hour ago, Senator Kerry called the White House to congratulate President Bush on his victory. Kerry is expected to address his supporters in Boston about an hour from now. President Bush is currently scheduled to make a victory speech here in Washington at 3 p.m. Eastern Time. We'll bring you live coverage of both events. In some ways, yesterday's election is almost a mirror of the results 4 years ago. So far, just one state, New Hampshire, switched. New Hampshire went to the Democrats this time around. Iowa and New Mexico are still too close to call. In some other ways, though, the Bush-Kerry vote looks very different from Bush-Gore. Turnout was much bigger yesterday. Unlike last time, the president won the popular vote, and because of the record turnout, he received more votes than any presidential candidate in history. John Kerry, at the same time, got more votes than any other loser. As we await Senator Kerry's concession speech, we'll take a close look at who voted yesterday and why. We'll get an update on congressional races. Republicans expanded their majorities in both houses. And we'll take a look at some of the ballot initiatives and referenda. We'll also be taking your calls. Why do you think things turned out the way they did? What were the driving forces behind voters' decisions? What were the driving forces behind your decision? We've got two phone numbers today. If you voted for President Bush or lean that way, the number is 800-344-3893. Again, 800-344-3893. If you voted for Senator Kerry or lean that way, the number is 800-344-3864. Again, that's 800-344-3864. NPR's senior Washington editor Ron Elving joins us here in Studio 3A. Ron, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Neil.
Why is Senator Kerry conceding now?
We can only assume that the Kerry campaign, while emotionally inclined to continue to fight, as John Edwards said early this morning, count every vote must be counted, they must have looked at the numbers in the hours just past and concluded that there simply are not enough provisional ballots with a high enough likelihood of being both legitimate and Kerry ballots to overturn the result in Ohio. Our last information was that a little less than 140,000 votes separate the two candidates in Ohio. There are some absentee ballots just counted or just added to the pile yesterday, which they can count fairly quickly. But then, in order to turn around a roughly 140,000 vote margin, you would probably have to have something on the order of 250, 350. It's really hard to say how many provisional ballots. You have to assume that a certain number of the provisional ballots are not going to be counted because they weren't brought to the right precinct or there was something wrong with the person's registration. And then you have to ask yourself, of the remaining provisional ballots, what are the chances that they split 7, 8, 9 to 1 in favor of Kerry?
So with this concession, the Democratic candidate has made a call to the White House. As we now look back on this election, the map of red and blue is virtually unchanged from 4 years ago, yet the results seem to be decisively different. The president can be confident of a declared decisive victory.
Yes, there's a mandate associated with this, if you want to call it that, that was not associated with 2000. Another factor in considering whether Kerry should continue the contest, as it were, and refuse to concede, is that the president has won the popular vote. And not only has he won a plurality, he has actually won a majority of the votes. Now, it's not a huge majority. It's just barely over 50%. It's about 51%. But that is still a decisive majority over John Kerry's vote. And that's the reverse, of course, of what we saw in 2000, when in that case, 500,000 voters more voted for Gore than voted for Bush. So there's really not that source of legitimacy for a challenge for John Kerry. That is the first element of the president's mandate. As you mentioned, he'll be able to say, and I'm sure many of his partisans will, he received more votes for president than anyone has received before. Second part of the mandate, of course, is that the Congress now has a kind of full permission from the people. This is the way the people grant their permission. It's not done by plebiscite. It's done by elections to proceed with the president's agenda and with the agenda of the Republican leaders of both chambers. It's been controversial. It makes a lot of Democrats extremely angry, and it has mobilized a lot of Democrats. But the voters now have returned more Republicans than we saw before. Only a few seats in the House, but a few seats is a critical difference, and it also establishes a trend, and it's also a 12-year period now that the Republicans will have controlled the House. Over on the Senate side, really the destruction there is far more extensive. Not only did the minority leader, Tom Daschle, himself lose his bid for re-election by 4,500 votes in South Dakota, but behind him, an entire generation, really, of people who would have been the next generation of Democratic senators from the South and from the West has failed to materialize. In the South, there were five vacancies. Every single one of them went Republican. Five Democratic seats left vacant by retirement, all went Republican. And in the West, while Ken Salazar is going to be our first Hispanic in many years in the Senate, and a Democrat, winning narrowly in Colorado over Beer Baron Pete Coors, he's pretty lonely as a victor. If Tony Knowles emerges still from Alaska, that would be one other consolation prize. But right now, it looks like Alaska is leaning towards staying Republican. And another state where the Republicans had the Democrats had high hopes of picking up a vacancy, Oklahoma, they were stunned by the degree to which that race went south on them, and the Republican won by double digits.
In Kentucky, what had been thought a safe Republican seat came down to the wire, but Jim Bunning, the Hall of Fame baseball pitcher, did hold on in the end. One other highlight for the Democrats on an otherwise dark day, Barack Obama winning an open Republican seat in Illinois.
Interestingly, the people who were still pulling one out for the Democrats and giving them a bright spot in all these results were Ken Salazar, the Hispanic candidate in Colorado, and Barack Obama, the African-American candidate in Illinois.
Coming into this election after the fiasco 4 years ago, there were great concerns about the reliability of the election, about the credibility of the vote count, about the new electronic machines that were being used in many areas, concerns about widespread efforts to disenfranchise people, as there were allegations of that going on 4 years ago. At the end of the day, does this concession by Senator Kerry suggest that the Democratic Party, at least, is convinced that it was reasonably clean, that the number of complaints that are out there are nowhere near enough to come close to swinging this election?
We saw in Florida in 2000, literally thousands of people turned away from the polls for one reason or another. Many, many stories that were quite compelling and convincing that were told. And yet, in terms of courtroom evidence, something you could take before a judge, something that you could make a legal case on, almost nothing. Very little. The kinds of stories that could be taken to the Civil Rights Commission, but not the kind of evidence that could be taken to a courtroom and make a difference. It's extremely difficult to do unless you have something that's proof.
We are told that Senator Kerry's phone call to the White House this morning was very brief. As he looks ahead at this point, what can we expect from his concession speech? And let me couple that with President Bush's remarks. Again, we're expecting those at 3 o'clock this afternoon, Eastern Time. President Bush, with this mandate, what can we expect to hear from him this afternoon, do you think?
Well, starting first with John Kerry, I suspect he will want to cast his decision not to contest the race further, largely in the terms of national unity and healing. That, say, for example, Al Gore did when he finally conceded after the Florida debacle 4 years ago. Many people felt that was the best speech Al Gore gave all year and that nothing had become his candidacy like the leaving of it. In the case of John Kerry, we may or may not see something quite that eloquent, but I'm sure that he won't talk so much about how many votes or the calculus, and he will talk about the potential damage to the body politic that would be caused by a long and contentious struggle. When we get to George Bush at 3 o'clock, I think the president will probably remain generally thematic. He will stay in a rather stoic mood, given the mood of the country, given that we do have economic concerns, and most particularly given the overhanging concerns about the war on terror and the war in Iraq. These are problems that are not going to go away, that are very much on the president's doorstep this morning, and I think he'll probably want to remain in a more stoic mood and yet lay out some themes for a second term. Nothing terribly programmatic, we'll hear that soon enough, but some themes for things he would like to pursue in another 4 years.
In his after his much narrower victory 4 years ago, President Bush, many people thought, would try to rule from the center. He did not. There were some aspects of that, the No Child Left Behind Act, prescription drugs program, that sort of thing. But most Democrats would certainly say that he played much more to his base on the right wing. He now has a more decisive mandate 4 years at later. What can we expect him to say about the idea of trying to heal the country and unite it after another very bitter election?
Another way to describe what he did in 2001, even prior, of course, to the 9/11 attacks, would be that he tried to redefine the center and then govern from it. I think we're going to see a lot more of that. We're going to see the Republican Party making a major effort to redefine as centrist ideas, some of the ideas that they have been pushing without much success for a generation and more, such as privatizing Social Security, in part, for some recipients, maybe not current recipients, but new people coming into the system, being able to set some of their money aside to be privately invested. I think we'll see a great deal more pressure on the tax system, not just in the sense of a tax cut at the margin, but in the sense of redefining how we tax our economy. Perhaps much more taxation on consumption, sales taxes at the federal level, and less taxation on income, particularly on investment income. We've seen some of that already. I think we're going to see a great deal more of this as a place that the House Republicans want to go, and now we have 54 or 55 Republicans in the Senate, almost all of whom are going to want to go there with them. Mm. So President Bush will have not only the opportunity to propose that kind of legislation, but a real possibility of enacting it. Another thing I think he's going to do that will redefine the notion of the center is I think he will appoint people to the Supreme Court who are much closer to what would be considered the conservative wing of the court, moving, if you will, the center of gravity to the right decisively, not perhaps in replacing Bill Rehnquist if his health demands it, but in replacing some of the other justices who might retire in the months to come.